Is anyone home? I am a foreigner. I missed my bus, and now I need spoilers for the movie Phenomena. Oh no! You are not a bus!
This is Diabolical, the comedy podcast where four long-suffering friends dissect film's most dastardly schemes, then compete to improve them. I'm your host, the best, and this week's movie is Dario Argento's Cuckoo for Katya horror epic Phenomena. So, Peril Pals, stick some Iron Maiden on your stereo system at a very odd moment, because it's Saturday, you know what that means. Let's get diabolical! Hello and welcome to this week's pod, wherein these three insect experts and I comprise the panel of Peril, who will compete to see who can improve the villainous plan of the week the best to earn points for our leaderboard in the show's competitive round. But first, if you would tell our lovely Peril Pals your names and a notable encounter that you have had with an insect, please! And we'll begin with Adam.
Hello, Adam here. My most notable interaction with something small and multiple legs would probably be I went to a zoo, I think Chester Zoo, with an ex-girlfriend, and she was petrified of butterflies, and we went in the butterfly house, and it was
something else. I'll go and tell you, flipping heck.
Panic, absolute panic. So that's probably the one that sticks in my head most of all.
Yeah, Mina doesn't like moths and butterflies. I didn't know that was a thing before, but she says she hates the powder on their wings. It freaks her out.
It is weird, isn't it?
And the fact that they move so erratically.
They're not like fairies that when they flap their wings, it sprinkles everywhere. Does she know that? It doesn't like fall on them if you walk under them.
It's just mad, isn't it? Like, oh, it's a butterfly.
A light dusting of magic.
No, don't get your dust on me.
That is weird about Mina, though, because I remember her telling me about when she was young, putting a string around a cicada to try and walk it around.
Yeah, no problem with other insects. Just butterflies, like the most innocuous of all of the insects.
Freakishly fine with other insects and trying to take them into our house. But yeah, get stuffed with some butterflies.
Next, let's hear Ben's.
Hi, Ben here. And my most notable interaction with an insect is going to freak you out. It's going to, much like this film, it's going to rock you to your core. I was down by the river with some friends having a barbecue and swimming and whatnot. The bank of the river was very, very stony. There was no greenery there, really. And we're all splashing about, and suddenly I just see this grasshopper hop in towards the river from quite far away. Boing, 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 boing. And then it stops at the edge of the river. And we're all like, hey, grasshoppers aren't usually here. So we kind of crowd around and have a look. And then we see start kind of wriggling, shaking. We're like, what is going on here? And then its forehead cracked open and this little brown tentacle started coming out.
Wow.
It came out to the point where it was much longer than the grasshopper itself. It was obvious the grasshopper was dead and this parasitic worm had eaten it from the inside. So someone grabbed it and put it in an empty Coke bottle, and we're watching this parasitic brown worm just wriggle in the water, and it was pretty gross. Anyway, later we researched it, and it turned out it was something called a horsehair worm. You know, they are parasitic worms that eat insects from the inside out, then control its brain in order to get it to the river where it can procreate.
Wow.
It was mental. It mind-controlled a grasshopper and made it bounce to the river. It was something like out of an Aliens film.
Yeah.
It made it go boing, boing, boing as well, which obviously drew your attention to it.
So. Yeah, it was crazy. He was doing his own sound effects.
Quite the showman.
He was going, wriggle, wriggle, boing. Yeah. Wriggle, wriggle, boing.
Don't stop, wiggle, wiggle. Wiggle, wiggle.
So that's where the Out Here brothers went.
Yeah, there you go. They're both parasitic worms, you see.
Very good. Now let's hear from Craig.
All right, Craig here. If you think that story's weird and supernatural, prepare yourselves, because as soon as I saw this question posed, right away this interaction popped into my head. were sat in a pub beer garden. As they often do, wasps were sort of buzzing around the pints of lager.
Bastards.
A guy that I was sat with, as a wasp, was flying towards my pint without looking away from me because he was talking to me. And like Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man, his arm snapped out and his finger snapped out and he flicked the wasp and it went flying all the way to the other end of the beer garden.
What?
That's not the weird part of the story. The weird part is they call this guy Minder because he looks a little bit like Dennis Waterman or some other reason.
He looks like George Cole.
Yeah, maybe. Also, I've heard other people say that's not the reason. It's because he was somebody's minder or something. I don't know.
Sings his own theme tune a lot.
He certainly minded me and my pint that day. I'll tell you that.
I could flick a wasp for you.
Well, now, as for myself, my notable encounter with an insect is with that big spider in the first Resident Evil game that you've got to fight. Ooh. Nasty.
Mm.
Quite a nasty encounter.
It's an arachnid.
Whatever. Yeah. I'm counting it as an insect. It's my episode. When you do an episode, you can class spiders however you want. This episode, they've been reclassified, okay?
If you'd have said noble encounter with a creepy crawly, you'd have covered yourself, but you've shot yourself in the foot there. In fact, you've got egg all over your face.
Hang on. Creepy crawly. Now, cut that back into the question earlier. Phenomena is a 1985 Italian giallo horror film directed and co-written by Dario Argento and starring Jennifer Connelly, Daria Nicolodi, Delilah Di Lazzaro, Patrick Bacow, and genre legend Donald Pleasance. The plot centres on an American schoolgirl, daughter of a fictional famous film actor, at a remote Swiss boarding school who discovers she has psychic powers that allow her to communicate with insects, who then uses them to pursue a serial killer who is butchering young women at and around the school. There's also a chimpanzee nurse named Inga who tends to Donald Pleasance's wheelchair-bound character Professor John. It is brilliantly batshit, the latter of which will no doubt have gathered by now. Look up, he's batshit crazy in your fractionary, and there's a photo of Argento. Featuring Argento's trademark brilliantly framed shots, female-centric setting, crazy score, and a bizarre plot that somehow manages to hang together, Phenomena is my favourite of his features. After its release in Italy, Phenomena was purchased for distribution in the United States by New Line Cinema, who excised over 20 minutes of the original cut, releasing it under the alternate title Creepers. This shortened version was also released in the United Kingdom the following year in the spring of 1986. But what did the panel think of this week's film? And we'll start with Ben, please.
Well, I didn't get it at first. It felt like a cheap, hot mess of a horror film. So I prepared to entertain myself by picking holes in it for the remainder. But then a particular scene happened, and it was one that you alluded to in your introduction, you know, with the heavy metal kicking in and its kind of fantastical elements.
Yeah.
And then I realized I had the film all wrong. I realized I was watching like an auteur's vision of fear and fantasy that had no self-censorship and probably no studio interference. And that reframed it for me, and I really started to enjoy it for what it was and all of its inconsistencies and idiosyncrasies. I think there were still a few sags, and like you say, the plot hangs together by a fly's wing at points. But there are also moments of stomach-churning ingenuity and like a twisted charm, if you like. So overall, I'm giving it, if you're looking for blood, guts, and creativity like nothing you've seen before, then this, Peril Pals, is for you.
Out of what?
That's out of five.
Five.
Ah. Well, interesting. Out of five. Then let's move on to Craig's opinion of it.
Well, this was a first time watch for me and a first Dario Argento. And I have to say that, to be frank, it made me want to watch something else. So I did. I got a subscription to Shudder and I watched Suspiria, Tenebrae, Four Flies on Grey Velvet, Bird with the Crystal Plumage, Deep Red, and today I watched Opera. And that's what I've been doing instead of sleeping this week. My new motto is, there's always room for Giallo. I live by that now. It's just fucking great, isn't it? Doesn't matter that the plot's crazy or that there's weird elements, because it's just all done with such confidence. Like, this is what's happening. Here you go. The Goblin scores are amazing. The Iron Maiden bit is really weird, but once you've watched a few Argentos, you kind of get used to that. It doesn't fuck about, does it? It hits the ground running with that, you know, tremendous opening. You're instantly in this creepy European countryside, and things that in everyday life you might not find that creepy, like a beautiful Swiss forest, are just instantly terrifying forever now. Some really odd, jarring stuff in it, like that one bit of voiceover that it has when she arrives at the school and you don't have any of the voiceover.
Yeah, it's mad.
But why not? Because it works for that bit, and you don't need it anywhere else. As I say, I've watched a lot of his films this week and, you know, picked up a lot of themes. He's always really interested in architecture, and you see a lot of that in this. There's really interesting buildings and places and stuff. I think Daria Nicolodi, I'm a huge fan of hers now. I absolutely loved it. Thank you for introducing me to it. I am a big fan of Dario Argento now.
Fantastic. I can't believe you've watched that many Argento films in 1 week. Must feel like your head's spinning.
More to go, yeah.
Okay, let's hear what Adam thought of Phenomena.
Yeah, I loved watching this film. Not for any of the stuff the other two have mentioned, probably. Just because it's a Dario Argento film. I've seen a few before, and it's the type of film that I watched when I was younger that you record at 4 a.m. on Channel 4 on a Saturday night or something like that. And you always knew you were going to get gore, you were going to get something shocking in his films, and this one delivers on that. Yeah, it was great. Absolutely mad as a box of frogs. The sound editing, the choice of volume and of tracks that they just throw in. I was pissing myself. And I thought, well, they can't go more than one Iron Maiden track, and then he doubles up on it, and it's just like, what on earth is going on? It kind of unsettles you, doesn't it? I think that's possibly why he's doing it in the first place, because the second time it kicks in when she's trying to escape the house, and then it kicks in, and it made me like laugh, and it sort of broke the spell of this like serious moment. And I thought, well, maybe he's trying to unsettle the audience in that way. Like, is this a bit of a joke, or is it? So I really enjoyed that. And there wasn't too many scary things. It was basically like a horror trope bingo card we should have had, basically ticking off all the things, you know, like probably wouldn't even got to the end, you would have had bingo. And he covers everything off, including having the bloody mercenary of film for finally realizing that indie horror is a money spinner, Donald Pleasance in another role. Bastard that he is. I was like, that's my first thing. One of my first notes was Donald Pleasance now realizing indie horror is actually worthwhile, so he can stick it up his arse.
What do you think of his accent?
I love it. I love how casual it is.
Oh, it dips, doesn't it? It's a bit patchy.
Minimal effort.
Thing is, how long has Professor John been living in Switzerland?
That's a fair point.
With the Swedish chimpanzee nurse.
Exactly.
With a fascination for sharp objects.
I thought there was some really great moments that were like stuff around when she took that fly, and all the fly bits and stuff around that.
The sarcophagus.
Sarcophagus fly, yeah. That's it. I couldn't remember the name of it. I didn't write it down. But yeah, I enjoyed that. But I just enjoyed it generally as like a bit of a throwback 80s horror film from him.
Yeah. Do you have some kind of involvement with Dawn of the Dead, or have I imagined that?
He's like the European distributor, wasn't he? He recut it and put a Goblin soundtrack on it for the European release. It's a slightly different cut.
He was part of the team that wrote what I have said before is the greatest film ever made, Once Upon a Time, where Sergio Leone.
Oh, was he? Oh, I didn't realise that.
Yeah, you were saying about the bugs there. How great are the most of the bug photography and the way that the bugs interact with the characters is really good. Obviously, the effect of flies swarming against the moon is a bit ropey.
Yeah.
But everything else is really good.
For the time, it wasn't awful.
No, pretty good.
That was before Labyrinth.
Yeah,
it was. I think, was it Jennifer Connelly's second film?
It was her second film, yeah. She didn't like it, sadly.
Well, didn't she get her finger bitten off by the monkey during shooting?
Ah, yeah.
Not bitten off, bitten.
Yeah, it acted hostile to thereafter, didn't it? They just filmed their parts separately after that, did I read?
But they still got the hug in, so I don't know if they filmed that before.
No, it was after, and she said she was on Conan when Conan did the talk show.
The Barbarian?
Yeah, and after she answered his question, what's best in life, she went on to talk about the filming experience. Yeah, she said that when they were filming that reunion hug scene, it started screaming and like attacking her and all that. She could see all the like crew freaking out and running to peel this chimp off her.
But yeah.
So we're lucky that it wasn't mauled.
She must have been so young, eh? Was she like 15, 16?
I think she was 16, yeah.
Wow.
Bloody health and bloody safety. Ruin films these days, isn't it? Get a young girl in there with a chimp. That's what I say.
The golden age of cinema, truly.
Yeah. I'd go along with basically everything everybody said so far. As I noted in my introduction, it's mad. Came about from Argento discovering the CSI technique of establishing time of death from the larval state of insects in the cadaver and span it off from there, and just how you arrive at a young girl who's psychically connected to insects from that. It's quite extraordinary and rather wonderful, in my opinion. Didn't she say she loves insects at some point? I love them.
Like in the car at the start.
Yeah.
I love them all.
And when she summons the flies to attack her bullies as well. I love all of you. The freaked out girls maybe for a second think she's talking to them, and then it's like, oh no, I see what's going on.
Goblin's score is, as always, just brilliant. Not quite topping their Suspiria score, which is just the sound of absolute madness. It's extraordinary. But I've been listening to a lot of Goblin walking the dog this week, just driving myself quietly insane. The first time I watched this film, Phenomena, my review just said, my favourite part is the banging Iron Maiden song that's like really propulsive, driving you forwards, and she's just slowly walking around the room, then trying to twizzle a telephone wire with the end of a walking stick. like, these two things don't match up, but it's brilliant.
Yeah.
There's that kind of dissonance that he does so well between sound and image in the films of his that I've seen. I haven't seen as many as Craig has. He's outdone me in the space of a week.
That was my hope. That's what I was aiming for.
Carol Powell's listening at home should see Craig's face. He looks withered. The guy hasn't slept. He's grey.
It's worth it, Peril Pals.
I reckon we'll just move on to our favourite moments. So let's begin with Craig.
I'm going to pick one that I think other people won't pick, hopefully, because I've got a few favourites in this one, but the one that I'll go with is Jennifer's great escape after she's been given an IV drip and left in bed with one woman watching her, and she has to quietly creep out of the room. There's this incredible moment where it looks like the knitting needle's going to drop it at the floor and wake her up, and it just lands softly in the yarn ball.
Fucking brilliant. Slow motion. With like a dull thud.
Yeah. So great. I absolutely love that.
Good one. Okay, let's hear Adam's favourite moment.
I've got to say, the bit I wasn't expecting, it's just her falling into that pool of dead bodies. The detritus is horrible.
Oh, yeah, that was grim.
It was absolutely brilliant, though, but I was laughing, going, oh, yeah, get it in you.
If you like people falling into unexpected things, you'll love Suspiria. So watch that.
Oh, that is hilarious, though. It's like, how didn't she see that? It's fucking ridiculous. The thing about that falling into that pool that I thought was funny is that conveniently, as she's climbing out, She gets washed completely clean by a clean water pipe. So quite handy for continuity there.
Yeah.
She's completely clean upon leaving the pool.
But again, that's done with such confidence that you don't question it.
Yeah, yeah. And let's hear Ben's favourite.
Well, my favourite scene is where Jennifer Corvino finds the glove. She's led there by a firefly. That's an Iron Maiden track in the background, isn't it? It gets quite rocky.
Think so.
Yeah, there's the two in there. Yeah.
There's a Motorhead track in there as well, isn't there?
That's a weird one, that Motorhead track.
It's one of those like rock tracks and she's going through the bushes. It looks like a fantasy film almost. It kind of takes you out of the horror genre for a second. That was really good. But obviously the main highlight has to be the monkey. Best actor in it by a mile.
Chimpanzee's an ape, not a monkey. Who's shit at knowing what animals are which now?
Cheers, Craig. Cheers, Craig.
What? The chimp is the best actor in it by a mile.
Chimps are always good on film, aren't they?
Really pulls off psychotic. Really well done, yeah.
Big ass as well. That you can't take your eyes off.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking hell. Definitely some serious piles there.
This is why the chimp bit Jennifer, because Dario Argento didn't like the chimp's backside and he was trying to keep it off camera.
Yeah.
So he said to Jennifer Connelly, if the chimp tries to turn around and show the camera its ass again, put your hand on its shoulder and stop it. So he didn't her holding it.
Right.
And that's why it bit her.
She should have done the Bruce Lee cobra technique of just twatting it on the head.
Yeah. Or the Crocodile Dundee one of the...
Oh, that would have worked, yeah.
That would have worked.
But I don't think Crocodile Dundee had been made yet, so no one knew that technique.
Oh, well, she should have known through like an insect intuition.
What? She's not really telepathic. That wasn't why they hired her.
She's not? All oh, right, okay.
How do I know what to say? It's written down for me.
My favourite moment. I've gone for quite an extended sequence, which I'm going to describe. The listeners at home who may not have seen the film. So it's the opening of the film, the first, probably run about 5 minutes. So a coach is travelling through the Swiss Alps. Some school children get in. It's windy, notably windy, but very beautiful bucolic. One girl is left behind, lost. And then the opening credits begin with Goblin's fantastic score.
Mm, that girl is Fiore Argento.
Oh, really? Okay.
Is that the author here?
Well, I didn't know. I didn't know the door.
It was a bit silly going into the Alps without a jacket, wasn't it?
Yeah, very.
Wow. She's a foreigner, probably. Is she a foreigner?
She's supposed to be like Danish, isn't she?
She's meant to be Danish, yeah.
I don't speak the language. Anyway, she chases after the coach, which doesn't see her. And she sees a house down the track and heads towards it. We see a shot of some chains being pulled taut from a wall inside. She says, I'm a foreigner and I'm lost. Then the chains pull free and she gets stabbed in the hand with some scissors. She runs up a narrow mountain track by a waterfall, screaming, and then she gets stabbed in the stomach. And her head, in extreme slow motion, flies backwards through some glass, smashing it, before we cut to an outside shot of her being decapitated and then her head falling down a waterfall. And I just wrote, what a fucking opening. It's so good.
The only reason that wasn't my favourite scene is because I knew it would be someone else's, just how amazing it is.
It was wild.
It's just absolutely batshit.
Yeah.
It's that juxtaposition as well where you see the girl miss the, and I think it's like a tourist bus, isn't it? And then you see her walking off, but then just does this panning shot up a tree for like 5 minutes and then goes back to the girl.
Yeah.
Really interesting.
What I got from that was it made me feel like what I was talking about at the start, which is in other films would be this beautiful landscape seen from that perspective as you go up the tree, just suddenly makes it feel very oppressive and creepy. It's kind of like Twin Peaks, the obsession with the woods in that. So I thought that really set the theme for me, the lingering look at the trees. The other scene I would have picked would have been the sequence just before she gets picked up by those awful German rapists when she's wandering half, you know, sleepwalking around the town and all the lights are blooming and you get her POV of that. I left that great.
Yeah, definitely. I like how you signify that she's sleepwalking as well. The white corridor traveling down it. I think it's quite a good visual metaphor. You pretty much know straight away, don't you? As soon as she gets up, you're like, oh, she's sleepwalking straight away. That opening sequence, I defy anybody to see that opening sequence and not want to continue watching the film. There's no way you're turning it off after that.
Unless you're scared of horror films.
Yeah,
I could see why some people would turn off, just go, what a load of shite, and turn off straight away. But for me, it's part of the charm.
I've got one note here that is making me laugh just looking at it. It's just five words. Be havoc in the car.
I know. Get it away. Kill it.
Don't hurt it. It's a little bee.
It's my friend.
Okay, well, with that, we'll move on to our favourite lines. And I think Adam's up there.
Well, it's a Donald Pleasance one, and it's very short. And he said, "That fly is your magic wand." So basically, entomology Harry Potter.
Yeah.
That's the one-line pitch.
I was like, well, he just comes out with some right corkers all the way through, just talking absolute drivel whole way through. That one stands out particularly. That flies your wand now. Thanks, Obi-Wan. Fuck off.
You see that spit? That's your pool, that is.
Yeah, let's hear Ben's favourite line.
I like the delivery of this line. It's when they're questioning Jennifer, trying to see if she's has mental problems or she's on drugs or something. And they say, do you suffer from epilepsy or do you take something like, do you understand?
Drugs.
And Craig?
Well, I've got Donald Pleasance as well, or at least part of an exchange between Donald Pleasance and Jennifer Connelly, which is a very cliched gag that they share, where he intimates that the insects are sexually attracted to her. He says, you're exciting him and he's doing his best to excite you. And then she replies, and to think we only just met.
Everybody's pretty much taken all of mine. I had the fly as your wand. And
what? I've got one you can have. It was my second favorite one. It's the one from the teacher.
Go on then, and I'll pretend it's mine.
Is she sane? Well, she's not normal. She's diabolic. Diabolic? The Bible also refers to the devil as Beelzebub, Lord of the Flies.
Yeah.
I thought that's an absolute corker as well for a horror film. I was like, oh, come on.
One of the best things about that is it doesn't really come up again.
Yeah.
Like in anything else, you might think that that was going to be the plot reveal, that she's, you know, Satan or something, but no. Just a coincidence. Absolute coincidence.
Yeah, good stuff. Any other lines anybody wants to add before we move on?
In the classroom, the teacher says, what about Richard Wagner? And someone just shouts, Richard Gere.
Yeah.
Yes. They might be wearing a Bee Gees t-shirt.
Yeah.
What about the Bee Gees?
What about the Bee Gees?
Were the Bee Gees even still cool in 1985? Maybe in Europe.
Obviously.
I guess. In Europe. But Saturday Night Fever was, what was that, 77, 78?
Disco's been big in Europe from the 70s until now. It's still huge. Everyone loves a bit of disco.
Yeah, Goblin especially had only just started getting into disco at that point because they'd split as a band, but Argento wanted them back to do the soundtrack. But the songwriter, the lead guy, he'd been getting into more synth stuff, and I think they actually described this as the first disco horror soundtrack, so they were a bit late to the party. Nothing else to say about the film, but...
Good, because no one asked you.
I see, nobody's asked me, but I'll tell you anyway.
I've got nothing else to say, and no one's asked me to say anything.
Gaz did a minute ago.
Did he? Well, I missed that.
Anything else to say before we move on?
I thought he asked for more lines.
Well, bit of trivia is you mentioned that your insect encounter was in a video game, and did you know there's a video game inspired by Phenomena? It was Clock Tower on the Super Famicom. It was never released outside Japan.
Right.
The protagonist is called Jennifer, and it's kind of a point-and-click adventure where a slasher is following her around a house.
Wow.
There's a few sequels to it as well. Ended up moving on.
There's a point-and-click on the Super Famicom.
Hmm. Super Famicom. Yeah.
The only thing I want to say is when that boat's little 5-litre petrol can blows up, it's like a fucking oil tank has gone down.
So much fire. That's not the most batshit thing in this film, though.
I was fucking pissing myself. Oh, no. There's plenty more to choose from, but I was killing myself watching that. It's just got bigger.
The second time I watched it, because I'd already seen the documentary and I was kind of on board with the idea that if you present something confidently enough, the audience won't question it. And I was like, well, that didn't happen to me. But when I rewatched this, I realized how fucking crazy it is that you just buy the idea that Frau Bruckner has covered all of the mirrors in her house with sheets and that she's got like 20 mirrors in every room. Why the fuck has she got so many mirrors anyway? And if she's not using them, why doesn't she just get rid of them?
Well, that might feature as a large cornerstone of my plan coming up shortly.
And the other thing is, like, they explicitly refer to the town that they're in as the Swiss Transylvania. And so you go into a house where all the mirrors are covered and you're thinking, oh, it's a vampire film, but no, it isn't.
Yeah, it's like, come stay with me, my big spooky house with my hideously sick son, who's mental, but he won't do anything to you. Oh, yeah, do you want some drugs that'll make you paranoid? Here you go.
He's alone in this room with his crazy thoughts. Don't worry.
That's literally what she says.
Yeah.
He stays in his room with his crazy thoughts.
In Phenomena, a whodunit leads us to discover that our evil schemer is none other than an all-girls schoolmistress. Frau Bruckner protects her strange, flappy-mouthed boy from the attentions of outsiders by simply murdering them and throwing them into a disgusting flesh pool in the basement of her creepy old house. That's basically it. She outs herself to Jennifer near the end of the film by acting suspiciously insane after taking the schoolgirl for an ostensible sleepover before her return to the good old US of States. But what did the panel think of Bruckner's evil scheme? And let's begin with Ben.
I don't really know. What is her plan? Stab a few people, put some sheets over mirrors. It's mad, isn't it? It's mad.
She gets away with it a lot, and she does keep people off the trail for quite a lot of it.
Yeah.
And when the Rozzers do finally show up knocking at her door, he has got quite a decent plan to dispose of the copper.
But she keeps him alive, right?
Yeah.
Bit of a boo-boo.
Yeah. But she was busy juggling plates. She had Jennifer to take care of at that time as well.
Yeah. But it all seems to fall apart. It's all, you know, hanging on by a thread, really.
Yeah.
And so if my freakish murdering son had broken free and killed someone, instead of just moving to a different house near a school, I perhaps would have left the country. So that was a big mistake. So I'm going to give her, for hiding her son for so long, she gets 5 florets of broccoli dipped in fondue.
Mm. Fondue.
Or as they pronounce it in Switzerland, fondue.
Mm.
Fondue. Wow.
Pretty good, all things considered. 5 on the broccoli scale. Let's see what Craig has to say about the evil plan.
She's gone away with it to a certain extent. So you have to kind of rate the success of it on that. Pretty good. I think her plan for dealing with Jennifer is the undoing. I think it's a terrible plan. And obviously I'll address that in my plan.
Oh, you saucy little bastard.
I thought I was going to address it much more neatly and quickly than I actually did. But then I thought about some of the things you might ask me and I had to add some more details to it.
Well, alrighty then. Let's hear what Adam has to say for himself.
I think she's done quite well to retain a sort of, while she's been the teacher or whatever, she's managed to retain a certain calm facade despite all these brutal murders. And it basically looks like the authorities are more interested in elsewhere rather than looking after these girls that have all keep getting bumped off from the school. So she's done quite well. So yeah, I have to give it to her on that.
Good. Two things that I'd note that I think let her plan down are keeping a disgusting pool of melted, liquefied human flesh in her basement. That's got a stinking place out, surely.
Yeah, good point.
The big house, though.
So why not?
Yeah, but still, that'd be pretty putrid.
Yeah, but you could just say, toilets are backed up.
It's Patow, isn't it? He's a necrophile. He likes to defile the corpses of the girls he kills, which presumably means he's sleeping with them. And he's not a child. He's a stunted adult.
He's 15, isn't he?
Yeah. And I imagine that he likes to swim in the cesspool.
Cleans himself off on that pipe as he scampers out.
Exactly, yeah.
You must have had a hell of a week. That's the kind of thing you're imagining.
Before we go any further, I'm just going to thank you for listening to our show so far. Thank you. If you like what you hear, pass it on. Recommend Diabolical to a friend, relative, work colleague, or well-wisher who you think will enjoy what we do. We want to get the show in as many ears as possible, and you can help us do that with just a few words. Have you listened to Diabolical Evil Schemes Done Better? It's really funny and very interesting, you would probably say whilst reminding them that we have a website at www.diabolicalpod.com. And do remember that you can also follow them on socials at DiabolicalPod, you would almost certainly add. Again, thanks for doing that. We have arrived at the part of the show where the panel of peril compete for precious peril points on the perilous leaderboard. Each member gets one vote, which will equal 1 point on the board. But do remember, you cannot vote for yourself, you saucy babies. Our task this week is to protect our little freak boy from outside forces and eliminate Jennifer the human and Inga the chimpanzee. So, let's do this! And we're going to start with Ben.
Following their meeting at the bank, Jennifer finds herself in the passenger seat next to Frau Bruckner. As the car weaves through the dimming light of day, a subtle chill descends, the air thick with unspoken intentions. After several minutes of awkward silence, they arrive at the Bruckner residence, its shadows stretching to greet them. Frau Bruckner isn't taking any chances with Jennifer. That insect stunt she pulled back at the school was bad juju. So Bruckner guides the spoilt brat to the back garden, where she set up an elaborate mirror maze. She had a shit ton in the house that, frankly, she just wasn't getting the use out of. That thing you said you wanted is in there, says Bruckner, nudging the girl forward. Jennifer steps into the maze, keen to find that thing she wanted. It isn't long before she encounters an unexpected obstacle. Frogs, scattered all across her path, their croaks echoing off the glass. She dances through them, and mere moments later turns a corner to see a whopping great Komodo dragon staring her down. In a moment of desperation, Jennifer summons her insect allies, but the frogs leap into action, their tongues flickering like lightning, devouring all of the insects with astonishing speed. This unexpected turn of events leaves Jennifer to face the Komodo dragon alone. She's got no chance. The giant lizard lunges forward and clamps its jaws on her face with devastating power. Inga, following the muffled screams and determined to help Jennifer, bravely enters the maze, but soon shits it after seeing her own reflection in a crazy mirror and mistaking it for another, much stronger chimpanzee. As she flees the maze, Bruckner lops off her head with a metal sheet. Now imagine all of that playing out backed by the following song. Born following an incident at a hospital, the freakiest kid that ever lived. He knew every stabby trick under the sun.
to tease the gods and everyone and have some fun. Maggot freak boy. 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 Ooh. What a cocky, saucy creep this one is. All the girls were murdered and kept by him until he was chained by his mental mum. And that was the start of his murderous quest. Maggot freak boy. Maggot freak boy. Maggot freak boy. Ooh, maggot freak boy.
Have you quite finished?
With a little bit of creepy stabbing, there'll be dead folk tonight. With a little bit of creepy stabbing, they'll all be dead, all right. Boom, boom. Yeah, that's it.
Well, I'm glad I didn't go with my plan of using birds to get rid of all the flies.
No.
I almost did. Almost did.
Yeah, but Ben ruined his own plan, didn't he? With one glaring issue, which is that I'm afraid dragons aren't real.
Komodo dragons.
A Mark Commode dragon?
Yeah, Mark Commode in
Mark
dragon form.
Dragon, yeah.
No,
yeah,
but what it really is, the real problem is that Komodo dragons will eat anything, but they especially will eat small lizards. And it'll plow through those frogs before it gets to Jen. Or it'll be your frog smorgasbord.
Nah. Ooh, they're kept kind of separated. Point, don't worry about it. And there's loads of frogs. You can't imagine. What's the biggest number you can imagine?
12.
Yeah, it's bigger than that. Way bigger.
No, wait, 17.
Yeah, even more than that. Double it, add a zero.
Can you do that with them? Hang on.
I think Inga is a pretty smart chimpanzee. So how come when she sees her own reflection, she instantly thinks it's a bigger, stronger chimpanzee and doesn't recognize her own reflection? She must have seen a mirror before. She must have.
Well, that's a good question, the best, the best, the best. And it would have made more sense coming from anyone else, but didn't you famously walk into a mirror at a mirror maze?
I did. Oh, he's got
you
there.
Hard as
he's
well.
He's got you there.
So strike that question from the record.
Are you dumber than a chimp?
So are you withdrawing your question there?
Cheerfully withdrawn.
Thank you.
If we had an award for best comeback, I think that would be a strong contender.
Damn your eyes. Okay, then let's move on to Craig's plan, please.
Also, Jennifer is having power over the insects. She is a dangerous foe and must not be underestimated. And now it seems she wishes to leave the country and return to the United States. Well, I have a little trick up my sleeve for dealing with her. Oh, yes, indeed. I shall be most accommodating to young Jennifer. I intercept Jennifer at the Swiss and Cashin Banken and tell her that I have been instructed by her father's attorney to buy her a plane ticket and give her money. Foolish little girl. Little does she suspect, I plan to do exactly that. I buy her a ticket on the next available flight. Of course, there are no planes this evening, and so Jenny must stay with me for the night. I anticipated she would not want to stay at the school. So to prepare for this, I previously chained up Gerbilface in his cell and locked it down securely, leaving him some twiglets to sharpen his teeth on. I also put all of my largely redundant and excessive collection of mirrors in a skip so as not to arouse suspicion and decided not to act like a fucking nut while Jennifer was around. Instead, I make her feel comfortable and safe. Geiger's arrival is unexpected, but I simply agree to speak with him privately, knock him out, discreetly shove him in the basement, and tell Jennifer he left. In the morning, I wave wee Jenny off from the terminus as her Flugan aeroplane is taking off. Without Jennifer to distract us, it's a simple matter for little Gerbilface and me to see that horrid chimp coming and kick it to death.
Kick it to death.
Best way to deal with a chimp.
Yeah, but it's got a blooming, it's got a cutthroat razor as well, though.
Yeah, I know, but it's only got a little arms long for its body, but relative to a human leg, pretty short. It's a range war. You're kicking that chimp to death before it gets anywhere near you with its blade.
It could go for your femoral artery.
Nah, it's only a straight razor, isn't it? At worst, you're going to get a nice leg shave while you're kicking it to death. Nice smooth shave.
Which is only going to help with the aerodynamics. You're going to exactly, kick much harder with the smooth legs. There's one thing you may have overlooked in your sleepy, horror-filled thoughts.
Damn. Because what I originally was going to say is that I put her on the plane immediately, because I assumed that Frau Brookenham was lying about there not being any planes. But then I thought, I can't prove that, and you might question it, so I'll just let her stay at the house.
No, I wouldn't have. I thought you were going to end it there. I thought that's pretty genius. But they have another visitor while Jennifer's at the house.
They do?
The policeman.
That's who Geiger is. That's what I said.
Oh, I was thinking of Morris. I thought it was Morris, the guy who turns up.
The agent. No.
Right, yeah. I guess he would show up eventually, but not to the house, because he doesn't show up at the house, does he?
Because then you could just hand her over, right? It's even easier. Don't exactly, you have to drive to the airport then?
Then you drive to the airport, yeah.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, it is a weird turn at the house, isn't it? Is that because Jennifer's noticed something, or I'm not sure where that turn comes from?
Yeah, I think she just is insane.
Yeah, right.
And she's been keeping it under her hat.
As soon as she gets in the house, isn't it? She just like a switch.
You can really be yourself at home.
Lets her hair down.
Yeah.
Wears heart on her sleeve. But then she really starts acting mental when Jennifer, I'm not sure, is she pretending to think that that dummy is her son to humour her? And I think it's weird. At that point,
yeah,
she's annoyed at the idea that Jennifer might be humouring her madness. I think that's what it is.
Yeah.
So she gets really pissed off with her then.
Hey, how many inspectors call at the house?
Just one, I think.
Ah, so you're a Geiger counter.
That's excellent.
Thank you.
Well, I think we're finished scrutinising Craig, so we shall move on to Adam's evil scheme.
Poor little Chompers. Some little Scottish bugger and his weirdo insect telepath prodigy have been snooping about, and now the blinking filth are interested in his crazy ideas too. How the blinking heck is she controlling insects and bugs? No matter. Frau Bruckner lives next to a lake, and as we all know, that attracts midges and other flying detritus. So, she needs some way of getting rid of them. Perfect cover for what she's about to do. Frau Bruckner buys several dozen large neon fly zappers and hangs them from the largest tree next to her house, craftily wiring them to a lamppost to provide them power they need. And hey presto, it looks like a giant purple Christmas tree. The perfect defense against entomology Gandalf and her friends. As an additional means of killing the airborne arseholes, she sellotaped cans of bug spray onto some large industrial-sized fireworks, the kind you'd normally see wowing the crowds at Aries Park. Launched into the air via remote control, they'd explode over the swarm and rain down horrible pesticides over them. Jennifer can either choke to death on the pesticides, or Freak Boy can have his way with her as Frau Bruckner stands guard. As for Inga, well, she has a plan for her too. Frau Bruckner pops to a local taxidermist and purchases a couple of leopards. Now, leopards are one of chimpanzees' mortal enemies in the wild, and when two leopards appear from behind a trapdoor, complete with a tape recorder sound effect, she shits herself, throws the poo at them, and legs it off into the night. She's later captured by an off-duty zookeeper. With both Jen and Inga now taken care of, her and Chompers can live in peace, murdering schoolgirls at their leisure. I'll say, P.S., I did have a plan for Giga, involving liberal continental attitudes towards drugs and lederhosen, but the plan went on too long.
We can infer from what you said there where it went. My plan for Geiger was almost just to put her hand down his pants, and I wouldn't explain any further
it's
from there.
More, yeah, it was more or less like when he turns up at the door, she's standing there in Legos and with a packet of drugs, like that, wagging at him, and eventually forgets his, what he's turned up for.
He just rubs his little greasy hands together.
How much is a taxidermied leopard setting you back?
700 Swiss francs.
And she's buying two of them?
200, yeah, two of them, yeah.
That's a, it's quite an outlay, isn't it?
Not sure of cash, is she? She's got a big fucking fortress house.
Yeah, she's true. She's got this weird income, hasn't she? She's got that indoor house pool. Is massive. She's got an indoor pool, yeah, full of bodies.
Taking travellers' checks off of murdered girls.
It's quite lucrative.
Yeah.
Doesn't actually change the end result of your plan, but strapping the bug spray to fireworks, would that not simply create a massive area of effect style explosion that just kills everything around when the fireworks explode? And just wouldn't the bug spray ignite instead of her choking to death on the bug spray?
No, it's DEET, isn't it? I don't think DEET is flammable.
I don't know.
Yeah, don't think it is. Because they have stuff with no non-DEET now, don't they? Because it's like so badly toxic for people, they don't have, or something like that, isn't it? Irritant. Okay. Or something.
Okay.
Who are you who's so wise in the ways of bug spray?
Anything else for Adam?
I think I'm satisfied.
And I'm going to finish us all off.
Every week we do this. Every week. What are we like?
I tell myself I'm not going to, but I keep coming back for more.
Says Inga. She is a very good nurse and indeed a very good chimp. She enjoys snacking on bananas, mangoes, and loves a good cup of PG Tips tea to wash it down with. PG Tips. says Inga. She's tired now. Tired from a day of fetching things for Professor John, her friend/patient, whom she loves and dotes upon, but whom can be a trifle too trigger-happy with his laser pointer at times. Inga, get me the television remote control, he'll say, whilst pointing the red dot at the TV remote. Why doesn't he just keep it in the pocket on the side of his wheelchair with his laser pointer, Inga thinks to herself. She's a clever lassie. Inga, fetch me that cordless rechargeable telephone, would you? He might ask another time. Why doesn't he just keep it in the pocket on the side of his wheelchair with the laser pointer and the TV remote, Inga thinks to herself. But she fetches it anyway. Where the dot lands, she must fetch and bring it to Professor John. Bearing that in mind, I propose that Frau Bruckner postpone her murder of Professor John and simply nick his laser pointer instead. This will confuzzle the heck out of John, and Inga will get a well-earned rest and perhaps a chance to sit at her typewriter and begin that play she's always dreamed of writing. The Fraulein can then take Jennifer to her massive creepy murder house and act far less creepily when administering her poison tablets, ensuring that she imbibes them fully. Once Jennifer is unconscious, Bruckner performs a rudimentary lobotomy, severing Jennifer's psychic link with the bugs, and can let her little freak boy have his way with her. Bruckner should then head back to Professor John's digs and give him a damn good knifing. But when Inga sees what has happened, simply point the laser at an object just over yonder. Her years of nurse school training kick in and Inga is compelled to fetch whatever object has been pointed at. In this case, let's just say an errant blancmange, and once her back is turned, we can stab, stab, stab away at her hairy back.
Did you say...
Aaron Blamange.
Yeah, an Aaron Blamange.
Yeah.
That is masterful. Well done, sir. That's awesome.
Is it masterful? Because I thought you were going to say it's a grenade. Point the laser at a grenade and then it goes to fetch it.
You got to use that weird plug-in knife thing, surely. Why is that knife? Why's it plug in together?
I've got one killer question here that might blow this apart for you.
It's not a grenade, is it?
No. Does Professor John ever point his laser at his own arsehole? When he's lonely.
Probably the first thing he did, doesn't it?
Just bored, doesn't he?
I point it at whatever I wanted to grab. That gives me a little idea.
Sorry, I couldn't resist, Peril Pals.
Mine is going to blow yours out of the water, I'm afraid. The best.
Okay.
If the professor's alive, why would Jennifer go to Frau Bruckner's house? She only goes to the bank because she's got nowhere else to go.
Yeah.
And then Morris calls Frau Bruckner. So that series of events would never happen. So you just fucked it up.
Doesn't she already try and get hold of Morris before that?
I think so, doesn't she?
I thought that she did, yeah. And she goes, he's out of town?
Hmm.
Maybe at the school, yeah. But it's when she calls asking for money to be wired, he calls Frau Bruckner and then she goes to the bank to pick up Jennifer.
Yeah.
And she only goes there because she's got nowhere else to go.
Well, in this case, she does go to Professor John first. But he says, oh, I'm sorry, Flower. I can't let you come in. I've lost my laser pointer. And he just doesn't let her in.
Genius. Well done.
Sold that one. Yeah. Well done.
Those plans, if I'm not mistaken, were fanny-jizzingly diabolical, weren't they?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's another hit. How does he do it?
A palpable hit. We had Ben's plan, which involved a mirror maze filled with frogs and a Komodo dragon. The frogs would counteract the bugs and then the Komodo dragon would kill Jennifer. And Inga would see her own reflection go mad and be decapitated. Craig's plan, where Jennifer got sent away on a plane by Frau Bruckner, and then they they kicked Inga to death. Turner's plan, which involved taping bug spray to fireworks, which Jennifer would choke on, and then buying some taxidermied leopards to scare.
And the fly zappers.
Okay, fly zappers too.
A side plan of lederhosen and drugs.
So there's like four plans for your price of one there.
An embarrassment of riches. And my own plan, which involves stealing the laser pointer first for killing Jennifer and then going back afterwards to kill Professor John and Inga. But there can be only one, two, three, or four people who get points on the board. So with that, let's cast our votes. Okay, let's see who Adam has voted for, please.
Well, it was quite a simple concept, but I thought it possibly could be the best. And that's why I voted for him. And it is the best.
Yes. I shall reveal whom I voted for. And I voted for Craig because I really enjoyed the image of a chimpanzee being kicked to death. I really, really enjoyed that. Don't clip that and use it against me in the court of law, please. Let's hear who Craig voted for.
Well, I enjoyed all the plans a lot this week. All very good. Strong work, gentlemen, but I went for the one that had the most bang for its buck. It was a lot of plans in one. And it had an idea that I almost used. It was a lot of bug zappers. And that was Adam.
Yeah.
Well done.
Thank you very much. First point in a while.
So that leaves Ben to reveal his vote.
I vote for the plan that once I heard it, I thought, oh yeah, that would have been the simplest way, which was just to let Jennifer go. I voted for Craig.
I did wonder, why would you stop her from getting on a plane? What's in it for you?
After you said it, it's like, huh?
This girl has a thorn in my side. How can I get rid of her? Better not let her go back to America.
When she has no idea that it's me doing it until I reveal it to her. With that, I shall reveal the scores in joint first place with 10 points each are Ben and Craig.
Oh, he's coming back.
Hotting up big time. Second place / third place is myself with 9 points. And bringing up the rear with 7 points, it's Adam.
It is a close one this season.
It's real close.
It is. Yeah, closest so far, I would imagine. I'm not going to go back and check. Well, we'll be back with our regular episode in 2 weeks, as next week we have our second special guest appearing, as we have Nemini Craven appearing to take on Muppet Treasure Island. Join us next week for a special. But until then, remember, everything will be all right in the end, and if it isn't all right, then it isn't the end.
Something like a phenomenon. It's something like a phenomenon.
I don't know any more words.
Get me and Turner standing in the wind to take a photo. You're not going to know it's windy. Get one of you, Phils. Obvious.
Except for your incredibly low-hanging testicles flapping about in the breeze.
The plot centres on an American girl. American girl? Schoolgirl. I definitely wrote schoolgirl there. Someone's been deleting the word school from my script. The plot centres on an American schoolgirl, daughter of a fictional... Fucking hell. This is going to be a tough one, folks. This is going to be a tough one. In Phenomena, a whodunit leads us to discover that our evil schemer is none other than all-girls schoolmistress Frau Bruckner. What? Fucking... You know what? I've got to start proofreading this shit.
Yeah, that's a good idea. It's amazing you've got this far without doing that, to be fair.
Should just be a full stop. There we go. In Phenomena, a whodunit leads us to discover that our evil schemer is none other than all go... In Phenomena, a whodunit leads us to discover that our evil schemer is none other than an all-girls schoolmistress. Frau Bruckner protects her strange... Did I say Bruckner or Bruckner?
Yeah, Bruckner.
Fucking hell.
He left quite an awkward gap between all girls and school as well.
All girls, all schools, all the time.
But now it is the end.